Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 78 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today on Hump Day is Rebecca Denniston of Taking Up Room and Taking Up More Room. Welcome back to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you, Rob. Hi, everybody.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. I've been enjoying myself this week. Hopefully you have too, and hopefully everyone else who's listening also is.
Absolutely.
So minute 78 begins with Jackson and Ryben taking on a mission. Sorry about that.
Bless you.
So minute 78 begins with Jackson and Ryben taking on a mission and ends with Mellish starting to spell things out. So we ended things yesterday with Ryben deciding that he's going to go help Jackson start looking through this little pouch filled with dog tags. So the two of them walk away, and they go and try and find a place to put all their stuff down. Now it's really funny. Jackson leans down and picks something up from on top of like a pile of bodies, and I have not been able, no matter how many times I scrub back and forth, I cannot figure out what he's picking up. It just doesn't make any sense for me, because it doesn't make sense that he's in unless he's pulling another dog tag. Maybe that could possibly be the only thing that he's that I can think of that he's doing, but it's also a very strange thing. Because you just see all these bodies just lying on the ground with ponchos over their faces, and you see their feet on the ground and stuff like that. I'm assuming these are the 22 men that that died in this glider crash.
Yeah,
but it's just a very strange thing that that Jackson does as they're trying to find a place to go sit down. And my first thought when I saw this was that maybe he's picking something up in order to, give himself a seat or something like that. But you can't, Mellish walks by, so you can't really see what he has in his hand. And when they eventually sit down, he doesn't have anything else in his hand. So I haven't been able to figure out what it is that, that he does. And then, they find an old carration box, and Mellish joins them, and the three of them just sit down there and start, going through all of these dog tags. And I mentioned this a little bit yesterday. It's just amazing the number of dog tags that are that they found here. I mean, DeWitt talked about the fact that there are 22 men that were killed in his glider. So I'm just trying to figure out where all the rest of these are. Unless I've been thinking about it since yesterday. Maybe when men are passing through here, they're just bringing DeWitt the dog tags of men that were killed along the way, because I can't think of any other explanation. It's not like they would be bringing the bodies to this area. That's the only explanation that I can think of. I mean, we talked about this weeks ago, when Miller took off Caparzo's dog tag. The idea is that you leave one on the body so that later on someone will know who it is, and you take one with you. And this way that this is a guy who's no longer with us. So I guess from that perspective, maybe over the last 4 days, DeWitt has been, collecting dog tags, from different people that are passing through. Because even when you look at the bodies, you have the row of the 22 bodies there, plus all of the injured, which we'll talk a little bit more about, we talked a little bit about it last week, and Wade's still tending to them, but we'll see them a little bit more. I think tomorrow, maybe tomorrow, the day after, I don't remember which day, but, all the guys that are injured, they don't have their dog tags. It's not necessary at this point. So it's just, again, there's a lot. This is one of those things that, you go to the county fair and you have to guess how many jelly beans are in a jar. This is, how many dog tags are in this particular satchel.
Yeah.
And obviously, no one really knows the answer except for the guy who did the production design of this movie, who said, I'm going to put in there, 236 dog tags. or something like that. I don't know.
They just started throwing dog tags in the pouch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Seriously. And then these three guys just start up a conversation, and the way that this conversation goes is very, very interesting. You know, it starts off by Ryman saying, "So what do you think, Jackson? You think there's little pricks in there? Well, if he is, I'm going to find him. I bet that son of a bitch is here. I got big money saying this guy's still alive. $10 says I nail him first. Let's see who we got here. You mugs don't stand a chance. All right. You think this little Berg is in here or what? Just keep looking." You know, so it shows the way that these guys have been slightly jaded over the last few days of fighting, that they're, you know, not taking this 100% serious with the way that they're doing this, but you know, they've made this into like a little bit of a game.
Yes.
You know, like how can we do this so that it won't affect us too much emotionally with the way that we're looking at things and stuff like that. And at this point, then Ryben pulls one out and goes, "All right, Gary Iannico, Ben Rubino, Mike Sisaccio." Now, I looked up those names because, you know, a lot of times in movies, they will use names of people from the crew or stuff like that. Yes. Wasn't able to find any of them.
Yeah.
They must all be friends of the writer or something like that.
Just like,
you know, any searches that I did, I came up completely blank.
Yeah.
But we're still going to go through first names because the last names, I didn't find anything on them. But so like the name Gary. Okay. Do you have any idea where Gary is derived from? Like how far back does the name go? What would you think?
Well, I would think it's derived from Garrett. I don't know how far back it would go. That's a really good question.
Right. Okay. So it actually goes back really far. It's originally from the Norman French name Gary, G-E-I-R-E-E.
Yeah.
Which that itself is a Frankish name, and it basically means a spear or like a javelin. Along with a royal. So it's like a royal javelin is the name Gary.
Interesting.
Yeah. Huh. The way that they changed it to G-A-R-R-Y, there are people named Gary with two R's, it's because it because of Barry, you know, the name Barry. So that changed it from that perspective. It is also a shortened version of Garrison.
Yes.
Some people believe that it comes from Garrett, but
yes.
the two names, as you mentioned earlier, the two names are completely unrelated.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They come from different places. So the name Gary was very rare as a given name between 1900s to 1920. And in the 1930s, it started becoming a little more popular. And then in the 50s, it became even more popular. And it became the 12th most popular given name of the 1950s for men, which is probably related to the fact that there was a famous actor in the 50s known as Gary Cooper.
Yes, that would have done it.
You know, a lot of people started using that. In the 1990s, it was it dropped down to the 170th most popular name. It went down a little bit over the years.
You don't see a lot of kids named Garrett or Gary nowadays.
Right. Well, Garrett, I didn't look up.
I keep saying Garrett. It's just like my brain is tuned that way now. So. Oh, whatever.
That's okay. That's allowed.
Yeah,
that's allowed. In England, it peaked in the 1960s, and it became the 16th most popular name in 1964. Mm-hmm. And in 1984, it was the 26th most popular name. And once again, in the 90s, it dropped far down. And in 2013, there were actually only 28 babies born in the United Kingdom that were named Gary.
Oh, wow.
And
Huh.
they declared it that Gary, the name Gary has become a dying breed.
Oh, poor Gary.
Apparently,
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we have the name the next name is Ben, because he was says Ben Rubino, so Benjamin.
Yeah.
Where do you think that one comes from?
Oh boy. I mean, obviously that one goes really far back, Benjamin and the 12 tribes of Israel.
That is correct. It is
Perfect.
one of the 12 tribes, so it comes from the Bible itself. And it means the son of the right hand.
Yes.
That's the translation of it. It is mo it's shortened by a lot of people to Ben. There are also other names of Benny, Benito, Benji, things like that. It's also the phrase the Benjamin of the family is referred to as the youngest son, because he was actually the youngest of the 12 tribes.
Yes.
It's even used in like people who speak Sanskrit and Thai and stuff like that. The name is it means the fifth.
Oh, that's
Yeah.
interesting. Wow.
So there are people that are named Ben Indra, which basically means the fifth Indra.
Oh, wow. That gets around.
Yeah, and it also can be a female name. I have never heard of anyone called Benjamina, but that apparently it is a name.
Yeah. It's not very common.
it's
Yeah.
it's it's actually more common in like Thailand and in those areas,
Yeah.
with that whole thing. And
Wow.
then the third name mentioned here is Mike,
Oh.
which obviously comes from Michael. Now, where do you think that comes from?
That's another name I would have to say goes really far back. I mean, obviously you have I can't talk. The Archangel Michael, obviously.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
So it basically means the it's there is none like God. That's what it means.
Yeah.
Meaning there's no one as famous or as powerful as God and things like that. Some people refer to it as one who is like God.
Yes.
There are some people who spell it MICHEAL instead of AEL. And sometimes that's also given to there are women who have that name also.
Yes. That's right. David's first wife was Michal.
Correct. That is correct. I'm even talking about nowadays in modern time. You have Michael Steele, who was one of the Bengals,
Oh,
walked
yeah.
like an Egyptian.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Wow. Oh,
Yeah.
boy. The song's in my head now, but
Okay, that's fine.
whatever.
Well, this is no
It's
longer
okay.
the thing you do.
Yeah,
We've
there you go.
moved on.
It's a trend.
So that's correct. Michael is known as one of the most common given names for men in the world. During the 20th century, Michael was the number one name given to males in America.
Yeah.
And in every year between 1954 and 1998, it was the most popular name, except for in 1960, when David was the most popular name, and that was the second most popular name.
Wow.
Ever since then, it has still been among the top three of every year since 1953 in America. There was only one year where it fell out in 2011.
Yeah, why was that?
What was the name at that point?
I mean,
I don't know.
why did it fall in popularity? Does anybody say or?
No, it doesn't say why it fell in popularity. Oh, it says that year it didn't
It just
it
fell.
wasn't
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, in England it's not as most popular. In 2014 it was the 20th most popular name. In Canada it was the 27th most popular name. Australia 42nd.
Oh, wow.
In Ireland in 2013 it was the 8th most popular.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not surprising.
Right. And according to the when they did the in 2020 when they did the census, so apparently it is the most popular name among Americans who are currently alive in
Oh.
2020, and they estimate that there were 3.83 million people in America with the name Michael in 2021.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah.
So they at this point, Ryben then says, "Hey, all the guineas are buying it, huh?"
Yep. Yeah, that scene. Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't want to, obviously we know how this goes over, but it looks like these guys are so cavalier about all these names that they keep fishing out of this bag.
Yeah.
That was the thing that struck me about it. It's just like they're so casual about it, but what else can they do?
Right.
They're looking for Private Ryan. So,
That's right.
but
That's right.
it's like they're dealing blackjack or poker or something,
Well,
which,
we'll get there. We'll get
yeah,
there.
I was
We'll
gonna
get through
say,
tomorrow more.
that's coming up later though. That's I
That's right.
don't yeah, don't want to jump ahead here.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they continue with their comments, and Millish goes, "Oh, come on, not the right name."
Yeah.
And
It's like that's it,
then
Ryan.
that's
Yes.
right. And then he goes, "Wee Willie Winkie, that's a buddy of yours."
Yeah.
Now, do you know who Wee Willie Winkie was?
Oh boy, it's been years. But I remember there was a nursery rhyme.
That is correct. It is a Scottish nursery rhyme.
Yes. Oh, that's been so many years. Oh my gosh.
Yes, it was written in 1841 by William Miller.
Ah, okay.
And the lyrics go, I'm not going to sing it, so it's fine. Wee Willie Winkie runs through the town, upstairs and downstairs in his nightgown, tapping at the window, crying at the lock. Are the children in their beds? For it's past 10 o'clock. Hey, Willie
Yes.
Winkie, are you coming in? The cat is singing purring sounds to the sleeping hen. The dog's spread out on the floor and doesn't give a cheep. But here's a wakeful little boy who will not fall asleep. Anything but sleep, you rogue, glowering like the moon, rattling in an iron jug with an iron spoon, rumbling, tumbling roundabout, crowing like a cock, shrieking like I don't know what, waking sleeping folk. Hey, Willy Winky, the child's in a creel, wriggling from everyone's knee like an eel, tugging at the cat's ear and confusing all her thrums. Hey, Willy Winky, see, there he comes. Weary is the mother who has a dusty child, a small, short, sturdy child who can't run on his own, who always has a battle with sleep. Before he'll close an eye, but a kiss from his rosy lips gives strength anew to me. I have absolutely no idea why Mellish brings this up here. Like, there's no real connection. They claim that he's compared to like the Sandman about the idea of helping kids fall asleep, stuff like that.
Yeah. Still seems
But
random.
yeah, it's completely random, and again, I don't know why it just comes here. And
Yeah.
then they continue their conversation, and Ryman goes, "We gotta find this prick." And then Jackson goes, "Where's this son of a bitch?" And then Ryman goes, "Don't mix him up, Jackson, all right? Keep him in your own pile.
Oh boy.
How am I supposed to know who we got? Why don't you just shut up, Ryman, all right?
She was.
Everybody be friends. Cranky there, huh? I think I got a winner. What are you talking about, Ryan?" And Mellish goes, "Ryan, take a look at that, Mellish." And he goes, "You know what? You're a genius. You really are." And Mellish then picks up the one that he's holding, and looks at it and starts spelling. And he goes, R-E, and then he gets cut off. Now, what I love that Jackson does when he's looking at this dog tag is he like spits on it and uses his saliva to try to clean it, so that he can try and read it a little better. It's a way of showing, and tomorrow they'll talk more about this, but that these dog tags are not necessarily clean.
No,
There's
no.
there's a reason why these dog tags are all there. But and there's even a point where Miller takes out some and starts looking through them, like in a very casual way, to try and figure out, okay, what can we do with this? Maybe we'll define anything here or anything like that.
Yeah.
Again, I think this is just a way for them to sort of pass the time while they're doing this.
It just
To try to figure out a way of, well, we've hit in so many dead ends. Why don't we just try this? Maybe this will help. That type of thing.
Yeah, and they get a little Abbott Costello type patter going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I love the chemistry between the characters in the scene because of the way that they're, and it, the chemistry will get even louder, I guess you can say, tomorrow. When they continue with their back and forths between them.
Yes.
But again, I like the way that they do this. It's presented well. It's showing that these guys have been together for a while. I don't know if it's if it's trying to show that they can have fun together, but it's the idea that they can work together for
Yeah.
things. And then there's a little bit of dark humor thrown in here, with the idea of Reiben saying, okay, keep your stuff on the side, yours are getting into my pile and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a yeah.
Which shows that they're, I guess, somewhat jaded at this point, from
Yes.
this whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, these are not fresh-faced kids we're talking about here. These are guys that have been in it for a while and they've seen a lot and it was a really effective way to film the scene too, because it's not, I mean, this could be something that could be potentially really boring. It's just them reading the names, putting them in the pile, reading more names versus this little patter session that they get going. It keeps
Correct.
moving and it keeps it, it keeps it where you're still paying attention because you're listening to what they're talking about. And so it was a really good way to frame that little bit in the scene there.
Right. I wonder if parts of this scene are actually ad-libbed.
I think it was. I would not be surprised if they ad-libbed it. I know Tom Hanks is famous for that. I bet the other guys are doing it too.
It is very possible because of the way that they're the way that things are going here. Like maybe all the names are actually like friends of the actors and
Yeah,
stuff like that.
that could very well be. I've heard that's been done in movies where they just give p actors names
Right. Here, I just did a
or
search
not
on
actors but
IMDb.
crew
Then
members.
no, the names that Ed Burns reads out are all friends of his.
Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
okay. So there you go. So apparently he knows a Gary Iannico, a Mike Cesario, and a Ben Rubino,
Yeah.
which I guess makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no wonder. They knew what to expect.
Yeah, seriously. And that's all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
Not really. That one's just, dealing out the dog tags kind of thing. Let's get through this and get going kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yep.
Okay, makes sense. All right, so every Wednesday we have a segment called World War II Wednesday, where my guests will give their top five World War II movies. So I know this one was not an easy one for you to do.
Oh,
I hope you were able to work your way through it eventually.
boy. Yes, I filled up, I've got this little piece of paper here. I filled up both sides of the paper with titles, and it's like, okay, which one's gonna get the cut now? Okay, I would probably say number five though, Memphis Belle. Obviously the 1990 version, not necessarily the William Wyler version, although I really like that one too. I mean,
Oh, you're talking about the William Wyler version or the 1991?
the 1990 version is the one I put on my
Right.
list though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I just the authenticity of that film for the most part was so well done. I mean, I got to about 10 years ago, I got to explore around the plane they used in that film. And I got to see, okay, Sean Astin sat right there in the ball turret. Perry Connick Jr. sat there in the tail, you know, and you could just really appreciate what they did in this movie and what these B-17 crews did when they were in the air. And so it's just, and the fact that they used the some of the few B-17s that were still flying at the time. And, you know, even back in 1990, there were very few of them in the air. And so it just was an amazing piece of work. And it's just like all these guys just worked together really, really well. And a lot of stuff came together. And plus you got Harry Connick Jr. giving out with Danny Boy. And it's just, that part's just fun. So that's a good one. But let's see, number four, I picked Pinup Girl with Betty Grable. And this is a movie from 1944, if anybody's not familiar with that. And Betty Grable, of course, was the number one pinup of World War One, and they built a movie, or World War Two, and they built a movie around her pinup persona, which, you know, yeah, the movie's not great. It's basically a lot of songs strung together with a teeny bit of a plot in there. But it's just funny to see how much they were able to capitalize off of her pinup and her popularity as a star. So it's, oh, wow. it's a time capsule type of movie. Just, yeah.
Wow. Again, have you ever seen Stalag 17?
No, I've been wanting to see that.
So in Stalag 17, there are two characters that throughout the entire movie are talking about Betty Grable, and they have this pinup of her, you know, in their barracks as POWs.
Of course.
And it's just really funny.
Yeah.
That,
Yeah, I've been wanting to see that one. I've heard it's really good. Okay, so then number three, and this one was a really tough choice, but I ended up with another musical. You can see this is a very women-centric list here.
What's wrong with that?
No, nothing at all.
It's you are a woman, therefore, you know, if that's the way your list will go,
that's right.
Then that's fine.
Yeah, and these are kind of the lesser known, you know, not quite the upfront World War II movies, but I put The Gang's All Here.
And but again, these are Rebecca's favorite movies, so that's why it works.
Yes, that's right. This movie is from 1943. It's an Alice Faye musical, and honestly, the guy, I will say this, it's not the best movie, but it's so much fun though, because you've got Eugene Pallette, you've got Edward Horton, you've got Benny Goodman in this movie, you've got Carmen Miranda. I mean, this thing gets crazy. There's one scene in it when Carmen Miranda is dancing with bananas and all these showgirls, and they're waving giant bananas around, and it's the girl in the Tootie Fruity hat. I mean, it is hilarious. The first time I saw it, I was like, what am I looking at? But it's so much fun though. It's about Alice Faye and the troupe of actors that she's with, and they're putting on a show for the soldiers. I mean, from that sense, it's a very cliched plot, but there's just so much here that's just so unexpected and so typical of that time period. There's a song at the end. Busby Berkeley directed the film, by the way. So you can imagine what kinds of things come out of this film. There's one scene where there's a chandelier hanging over Benny Goodman's head, and they're outside, might I add, but there's this giant chandelier over his head. And there's another part of it where you've got, it's basically an ode to polka dots. I mean, it's just, there's just some things. It's like, how do you build a song around polka dots? But they did. And it's got, you know, at one point it's got Eugene Pallette's head flying towards you, and you know, there's just all kinds of just weird stuff, and it's so much fun. It's just crazy. And then Carmen, of course, she's awesome. She's fun. Okay, so then number two, I put down So Proudly We Hail, and this is another movie from 1943. And this is a movie that starred Claudette Colbert and Veronica Lake and Paulette Goddard, and it's about army nurses in Bataan and Corregidor in the first part of the war. And this is a movie I didn't know anything about until I heard the radio version of it, the Lux Radio Theater version of it. And then I wanted to go find the movie. And it's just a very, very interesting film, because you don't often see the army nurses or just nurses of any kind talked about during the war in the movies very much. And here you have this group of nurses that go throughout Bataan, and they keep moving around to these different places, and they're trying to avoid the Japanese and everything, and they're finally at Corregidor, and you know they're doomed, but you're still rooting for them. And it's an amazing movie. And you have three big actresses in this thing, and just the fact that they were able to get along during the making of the film was pretty pretty amazing. Because
pretty impressive. Got
the diva thing going on. But they said everybody stayed very professional and it all worked out nicely. So yeah. Okay, so then the number one pick that I put, and this was kind of a no-brainer because this is one of my favorite movies anyway, but it's a film called Since You Went Away, and it's from 1944. And it's another one that stars Claudette Colbert. I can't talk. But it also has Shirley Temple, and she would have been in her mid-teens in this movie. And then Jennifer Jones is in it, and Robert Walker. So Jennifer Jones's soon-to-be ex-husband was in the movie with her. And then Joseph Cotten, it's got a great cast in it. Lionel Barrymore makes a cameo for about 5 minutes in it as the minister at the church service. And it's just about these women, and they are the head of the household. Tim Hilton has gone away overseas. He's in the army. And it's about how the women cope with being left behind and waiting for him to come back, and you know, all of the different day-to-day things that they go through. And they take in a boarder. It's Monty Woolley as this kind of jaded old colonel. And it's kind of it's a movie people have a lot of mixed feelings about. It. Either they don't get it nowadays because it's a thing that it has a lot of stuff in it that people nowadays may not consider or know about nowadays. Like, it mentions Corregidor. That's not a name that rings a lot of bells nowadays. But, you know, it's, again, one of those time capsule movies that really kind of puts you into what, you know, something of what women and people in general would have dealt with as living on the home front in America and how insulated we were, but how they come out of dealing with loss and uncertainty and all of the other issues that they would have had to go on. And it's a really good movie.
Yeah, I've seen it once and I actually enjoyed it a lot. I'm also a big fan of Monty Woolley.
Okay.
I actually loved him in The Pied Piper.
Oh yeah,
which is also a World War II movie.
Yes, yeah, I've seen bits of that. Yeah, I do have a couple of honorable mentions on here, which, you know, how can you not? But we've got Air Force is another 1943 movie. This one stars John Garfield as a gunner on a B-17. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen that one, but
yes, I've seen.
Okay. Yeah, that one's a really good movie. Once again, that was a movie that I never heard of until I heard the radio version, and then I had to see the film. And yeah, it's just very interesting because it's how B-17 crews would have operated early in the war before they were, you know, putting a lot of crews in the sky, and these were the OG B-17 guys. So very, very interesting film. And what other thing is funny about that film is they also relaxed the language standards a little bit, because of course the production code, you couldn't say certain words, and here they are saying them right in the film, and it's like, wow, either somebody's asleep at the wheel or they just didn't care, so they let those words through.
Yeah,
so yeah, I had too many choices, but I made deep cuts, so oh well.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. So thank you very much for that list. It was a great list.
Thank you.
Once again, why don't you tell people where they can find Rebecca Dennison?
Yes. I am at takinguproom.com. That's the blog. And then my Substack page is rebeccadeniston.substack.com. And then my social media handles are all takinguproom. And I'm on Twitter, X, whatever, Instagram, and Blue Sky.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, MovieAroundMinute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to MovieAroundMinute@MovieRob.net. So, until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude,
of days gone by.